Well, Julia, despite the calendar now reading 2024, a result very reminiscent of 2023, a low-scoring affair for both teams, but the Jays offense, MIA for the second straight game, this one a 5-1 loss to the Rays, and now 3 runs scored in the last 2 games combined after 8 runs scored in the season opener. So you've kind of gotten some good and maybe a little more bad from the Blue Jays offense through 3 games this year.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see that flip-flopping, right? So we got started with the season here in a very, very good note, seeing a lot of what the Blue Jays had talked about pretty much all spring training long immediately taking into effect here, right? Simplifying the approach, pulling the ball, making sure that you're staying on pitches that are hittable and not giving any pitchers easy outs. That's what we saw on opening day, and it was very, very encouraging after a full offseason and a preseason in which, you know, the Blue Jays pretty much just reasserted that they are trusting these guys. They are trusting this core. They are trusting what they have in place. And rightfully so when you look at projections and all of that. But at this point, show the projections matter very little. What matters is can they actually get it done on the field? And it has been a little bit disappointing to see what the Blue Jays have managed to produce over the past couple of games. Not a single extra base hit today, show, and that that'll catch up to you fast, even against, especially against a team like the Rays, which is extremely scrappy. And one thing that they do have is just this never-ending depth of pitching. And again, we saw that today here, show.
Yeah, 6 hits, all singles today, and the Blue Jays managed to scratch out 1 run in a 5-1 loss. I find it hard to blame Jays fans for not giving the team the benefit of the doubt after what we saw for much of last year, which is, let me tell you, the tenor of the text line right now. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk. We are live on Sportsnet.ca, on the Sportsnet app, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cellular device. You can shoot us a text, as always, 590-590. Name and location, the people's text line, as I like to say, is always open. You know, I'm sometimes asked, Julia, why, you know, Blair doesn't take text, but you do, Sho. And my only answer to this is a philosophical one, which is more along the lines of, I'm a millennial, and I am therefore predisposed to enjoy texting. I barely pick up the phone as it is. Like, it infuriates my parents and my older relatives. Like, my 85-year-old uncle pretty much refuses to speak to me unless I actually call him on the phone. So, but I am happy to take people's calls on Jays Talk, because that is the essence of the show. But I do enjoy sprinkling in the text line as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, because my parents actually complain that I never, ever answer their texts, and if they want to talk to me, they need to actually call me.
Okay.
In which case, I assume there is some sort of medical emergency, and then you better believe I'm going to pick up the phone, right? So we all have our methods when it comes to parents and sons and daughters and things of that nature. But it's fun to get to know you a little bit more, Sho, as well, in that sense. And now I know if I need to reach out to you, how to do it.
Yes, don't call me. Just text me.
Sounds
but
good.
That's only for you. If you if you're listening right now, certainly feel free to give us a call. Again, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the text line real quick, because this was something we alluded to right off the top, and I find it hard to blame anyone for thinking this way. Gus from Surrey: who needs a time machine? This Jays team has me feeling like I'm stuck in 2023. Donnie Baseball is the first quote-unquote offensive coordinator in baseball. Someone needs to tell Shapiro and Atkins that we aren't playing football. It's funny because, I mean, you and I did Jays Talk. You know, we've done a bunch over the last couple of years.
Right.
And I feel like I've spent a lot of time saying, there's no such thing as an offensive coordinator in baseball. And then they make this position with offensive coordinator as the title for Don Mattingly. And then it felt like it paid immediate dividends in game one when they scored 8 runs. And then just like not a lot since. Just not, you haven't seen a lot of consistent results offensively. And yeah, there have been some things I've liked. Like certainly George Springer's at 2 home runs in the first 2 games. Again, nothing today. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I liked his approach at the plate, again, he's not hitting 450-foot bombs every day, so it hasn't really factored into the last couple of games results-wise. Mm-hmm. So like you can't, you know, there is some good there, but I have no issue with people saying, hey, like this is very reminiscent of 2023.
Absolutely. And obviously we're three games in. No one is panicking. No one is making any rash decisions based on what we have seen, especially in the past couple of games. I do believe that there is tremendous value in having a guy like Don Mattingly just focus on offense for your team and figuring out the best way not only to strategize but also to pass along these messages to players, right? He's the guy that has done it at a very high level and successfully so. And it seems like when you see him speaking to players in the dugout or, you know, in spring training, he was constantly in contact with these Blue Jays hitter in the cages with them and all of that. It's very clear that he knows what he's doing here, and he has a pretty good sense of what it is that this team is trying to accomplish individually as well as collectively. So it's important not to overreact, Sho, but when you see just the complete lack of offense that we have seen, especially today, it can also get easy to catastrophize a little bit. This is a difficult division. It's not getting any easier. And each game is going to matter here, especially against a division rival like the Rays.
Yeah, in theory, I know it's early in terms of the standings updates. Like, I don't know, standings updates mean nothing until like probably like after the All-Star break, really. But, you know, there's a good chance that if the Red Sox win today and the Yankees win today, then the Blue Jays will be at the bottom of the AL East because the Yankees have beaten the Astros twice. So they're at the top of the AL East. The Orioles, last I checked, they were up by like, I don't know, they're up like 12-1 or something on the Angels. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Angels did not come back to win that game without checking. So the Orioles are going to be 2-0 as well. And then you have the Rays who are now 2-1, Blue Jays who are now 1-2, and the Red Sox were 1-1. So, you know, if they beat the Mariners today, could be something you don't want to see when you look at the standings. Let's go to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Eddie in Fort Erie. Eddie, get us started here on Jays Talk. What's up, man?
Not much, Sean, Julia. Thanks for taking my call on the first Jays Talk of the year in the regular season. I appreciate it.
Yeah, what's up?
Well, I got a couple of things. First of all, I want to talk about Kikuchi's start today. I personally think he didn't look the same without Danny Jansen behind the plate. And so I want to take you back to a call that I did with you last year against Texas when Bassett was pitching, and when Kirk came out of the game, he wasn't the same with Jansen behind the plate. And I just feel with Jansen behind the plate, Kikuchi pitches really well. And I mean, Servin did okay, but it's not the same. I know it's the first game, but it shouldn't go unnoticed, in my opinion. The second thing is, the incident that led to Cabrera's ejection and possibly a suspension. I don't understand why you have to pinch hit for bring Justin Turner in with possibly when you're down like what was it, 3-1 or something?
I think it was 3-0 when Turner was pinched.
Okay, 3-0. Yeah. Okay, I would have been okay if you brought him in to when you're down 3-2. Then okay, I can do that because now you have two more innings to play with, and the Rays just tested. Decided to test Turner, and he made a wide throw, and then, you know, which led to a run, and then the runner for the Rays gets tagged out at third, and that led to Cabrera getting ejected. And I blame that on Snyder for doing that. You have to, like, realize who you're facing and knowing what they're going to do to get under your skin. And ultimately, it got underneath Cabrera's skin. He got ejected, and he might face a suspension. I'm very, like, that was very, very bad managing, in my opinion.
Hey, Eddie, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk to start at least our half of Jays Talk off. Okay, so a couple things there. We'll get to Kikuchi in a sec, just because I want to have a longer conversation about Kikuchi's start today. But on Justin Turner and then the Yenesis Cabrera, a scuffle with Jose Caballero. So Justin Turner, I do understand why you bring in Justin Turner at that point, right? You got runners on. I think it was first and second at the time. You bring on Justin Turner. In theory, even if you haven't seen it so far this season, in theory, that's his role, is to drive in runs, right? Because he bats fourth most of the time. They pinch it Kiermaier for him, and then you get the result you got. And it's unfortunate because he stung the ball. He just hits it on a line drive right to Randy Arozarena's glove. and it's an out. It was like 105 miles an hour. Again, doesn't matter because there was no result of it. But I do understand why you bring in Turner. I didn't like the fact that they then put him at third base because, I don't know, you really want, like, I don't know how Justin Turner is, 39 years old. Do you really want someone who didn't play a lot at third base last year, playing a lot at third base going forward? I do think that did lead to some aggressive base running, perhaps, because because it's, you know, it's a guy who probably is not moving out there a lot. I don't know that I would agree with Eddie's point of tying Justin Turner's presence to Cabrera losing his cool, though. Like, that was, I find all of that, I don't know where you fall on the Yenesis Cabrera scuffle with Caballero, but I don't really draw a parallel line between those two things.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting point when you consider that not even during spring training did we see Turner play a ton of third base, maybe one or two reps, and that was pretty much it. I mean, the Blue Jays pretty much, you know, liked what they saw in that limited time, and they thought that he would be able to, and he is able to handle third base, right? He is a guy that has kept himself in pretty good shape, and he knows what he's about. The errant throw there is an unfortunate situation for sure, but there's really no way of knowing if it would have been any different if anyone else was at third. That was a difficult play to begin with. That said, when it comes to the Cabrera stuff, I think we can all agree that was pretty much uncalled for, right? There was really no need to do that. I understand that sometimes,
from Cabrera.
Yeah, for sure. From Cabrera himself. It's sometimes the game will get under your skin, and you know, you are going to react. But this is, I believe, what separates, you know, the good from the great, or the perennial major leaguers to good pitchers from time to time, is the ability to let it go, right? When you are confronted with a frustrating situation, with an intrusive thought, or whatever it may be, with a taunting opponent, or whatever, the ability to just let it go is a big part of what makes a major league pitcher great. And we didn't really see that from Cabrera today. Does that mean that he's no good and the Blue Jays should get rid of it? No, of course not. He has his value on this team for sure. He has a very, very important role, and he has proven that he can do it. But this can also be perhaps an opportunity to reevaluate just some of the mentality on the mound and sticking to the task at hand, right, Sho? Because at the end of the day, what the Blue Jays are trying to do here is win a championship.
I don't know. The Cabrera thing, like, maybe he did go over to third to cover third, like, in the back of his mind, because no one was there and Bo was kind of hustling after Caballero, to make the play. So he was kind of behind him. There was no one else there. And that does tie into Eddie's point about Justin Turner. But it does make me wonder, like, I mean, what could Caballero have possibly said to him to warrant such a reaction, right? I mean, because he kind of jammed him a little bit. I mean, it was a very glancing blow. It didn't seem particularly consequential. And then he gets the reaction he gets. And I don't know, baseball fights are also just like the funniest things I've ever seen. Maybe it's because, you know, you watch like a hockey fight, for example, or like some kind of, you know, in different sports, different fights. And sometimes in baseball, you get Jose Ramirez versus Tim Henderson. And then sometimes today you get what you get. Again, I just find it hard to place most of the blame anywhere but Cabrera. To Eddie's point about suspension, though, let's just say he gets suspended, right? I don't think he will, but you never really know. Maybe it's a one-game suspension. Who knows? But let's say he gets suspended. For a bullpen that's already being taxed, I mean, we don't have Eric Swanson. There was some positive news with him. He threw a bullpen session, and it is not that far away from facing live batters. So that's good to know. Jordan Romano's still about playing catch, so they're a little further away, but they're not available is the point, right? So they're not available. Let's say Cabrera is now not available. That's a pretty thin, like, it was already thin, and now it's even thinner, and it's unfortunate that it's not, like, injuries are obviously a whole other conversation, but it's unfortunate that he kind of put himself in that position by reacting the way he did.
And Cabrera hadn't thrown a super high amount of pitches there. He was probably or potentially a candidate to go back out and give the Blue Jays a little bit more length, knowing that this club is spread so thin right now, not only in the bullpen, but also in the rotation. Kevin Gausman, who gets the start tomorrow, is not stretched out all the way.
Right.
You can't expect him to throw 100-plus pitches in 7 or 8 innings here. It's just not feasible for where he is right now in his preparation. Yusei Kikuchi does not manage to get out of the 5th inning, so you are already missing out on length with him, too. And then you turn to your bullpen. These are the guys that now need to carry the Blue Jays through. Wes Parsons did a tremendous job of that yesterday. You know, he pretty much kept the Rays at bay, a little bit of trouble here and there, but he gave the Blue Jays, I believe it was 3 innings of relief pitching there. And that is exactly what the team needed, because Chris Bassitt couldn't go as far as he would have liked to go. And so this is the job of this bullpen right now, without Jordan Romano, without Eric Swanson, and then also looking at the rotation and where it is right now. There's a lot riding on this first week, or this first turn through the rotation. We don't know where things are going to fall next week or when the Blue Jays come home. And so the more these guys can manage not only to keep their stuff present on the mound, but also to keep their cool, this is what the Blue Jays are going to need from them.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Adam in North York joining us here on Jays Talk. Adam, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is that I cannot stand this long road trip at the front of the season. They could end up coming home maybe 2-8, and the season will be over. This is the hardest, the hardest division in baseball, and to have, I know it's all because we gotta make sure the Rogers Center is happy.
Well done.
But I just don't agree with it. I just think it's a huge mistake. It was a mistake to let it go, and we're gonna pay. And we, I'm not we. I don't own the team. They're gonna pay, and then I'd also like to talk about what happens, and this you can put on for later. What happens if the Oakland A's start off like they did last year, and with they and the Rockies? I mean, is baseball just not caring about teams being so terrible?
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, hey, Adam, thank you for the call. I appreciate it, man. First of all, on the A's and Rockies, it is true. Like, if you look at the payroll lists of, like, their opening day 26-man rosters, it is, like, pretty wild to see the payroll of the A's and the Rockies compared to, like, I'm not even comparing to, like, the Dodgers, like, comparing the payroll to, like, the Cardinals or something, right? Like, it's pretty crazy. So it does feel like something should be done about that, but I will defer to Jeff Blair on that.
Right.
On the record to start the year, I fervently disagree that starting the year 2-8 means the season is over, just because there are so many games. There's so many games. It does, don't get me wrong, it does put you behind the eight ball when it comes to your, like, record within the AL, your record within the AL East, which last year, as we know, Julia, was not pretty. It was,
right.
it was a bad record.
Yes.
Basically virtually against every team. And a lot of that did come against the Orioles. Like, they were like a game under 500 kind of for versus most of the other teams in the AL East by the end of the year. But I understand the point that you are in a bad spot if you are 2-8, like, objectively. But at the same time, I don't agree with the idea that the year's over if you start 2-8. Does that mean it's okay to start 2-8? No. But I just don't think, like, there's so much runway. I know people are sick of, like, it's early and it's the small sample size and so on. Like, I totally get that. But I don't know. Like, in a season that has 162 games, does 10 games really swing it? I tend to think no.
And it's also important to remember, Sho, that other teams in different points of the season are also going to have, 10-game road trips. This is part of the sport as well, just being away from home for a little bit longer and grinding it out on the road. And we know that it is a grind. And sure, maybe it's not the ideal way to start the season, but these guys are professionals and they've honestly dealt with worse, right? They have dealt with half a season in Dunedin and half a season in Buffalo during the COVID years. These are guys that know what it takes and what it means to be part of a major league team. Strength of schedule is not on the Blue Jays' side right now. That is for sure. The Blue Jays have a ton of difficult opponents, not just on the road, but also when they come back to Rogers Center.
Yeah. I think that's the Mariners and the Yankees
there
pretty early on.
Yeah, which, it would be tough for any team. And when you look at the Orioles' schedule, it's a different story. These things tend to even out in the end. And it is unfortunate that this is the starts that the Blue Jays are getting for a variety of reasons, but it's also part of the sport. And I would say that if it happens that, they drop a ton of games in this road trip, they come back and they're in perhaps a different spot, it's time to regroup, but it's no time to throw in the towel in any way, shape, or form.
I want to read you a couple texts here, Julie, on the text line, 590-590, name and location. And I had this question myself when it happened during the game, which is why I do want to read you these, because I think they're valid questions. So Liz in Burlington and Aiden from Halifax both have the exact same questions. So, well, congratulations, guys. You're on the same wavelength. Liz says, why didn't they pinch hit Kirk late in the game for serving, even with the expected workload, giving away key AB in a big spot? And Aiden, same thing. Why was Brian Servin allowed to hit as a tying run in the seventh? A guy with a career average of less than 200 shouldn't be on a competing roster, let alone getting late game ABs. I would have liked to see the front office acquire a serviceable third catcher. I know that's not easy when they found out Jano was out. So, okay, so the reason he's the backup catcher. So like that's not that he's on the roster is not a huge problem for me, right? Because if Jano was healthy, he would not be on the roster, right? And the truth is there aren't that many serviceable catchers who are probably that much better than Servin that you would want to give up like actual assets for. Like, because I think a lot of people think, oh, well, the Royals are going to stink this year. Go get Salvador Perez, or like, I don't know, like some other team is going to be awful. Go get their starting catcher. Even the bad teams, like Adam's point, even the A's and the Rockies aren't doing that, right? Like, you're not going to go get Elias Diaz and kind of just stick him in there, right? So I know that's not Aiden's point. It's just I don't think that's as easy as you think it is. And I fall for that sometimes because I love to play the fake trade thing. And everyone who listens to us on JSOC knows that. But it is a good question, even with a huge workload on Kirk's plate, why he wasn't in the game late when you needed some runs, because he has hit well in the spring. And again, early sample sizes don't favor him super positively, I suppose, through two games. But I mean, if you need a hit, you want your best players there. And I think it's a valid point to ask why not Kirk instead of Servin. And the only thing I can think of was they're just being really strict with these days off early, because otherwise that also would suggest probably that Kirk's going to play tomorrow, and that he's probably going to get most of the starts against Houston as well, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what we expect, right? No one is expecting to see Brian Servin every couple of days. He is the backup catcher, and that's very much his role, and Kirk is going to get the majority of the workload here. I think it's a super fair question to ask, Sho, and it's one that you and I asked ourselves as well, right? If you're in that position and the game is close as it was, then why not bring in your best offensive option for that moment? And you raised the point of, are the Blue Jays being extra strict right now with Kirk's off days because we expect the workload to be as intense as it is? Yeah, that's possibly or probably a big part of that decision. And it will serve them well, especially in the long term or in the midterm, to think about that right now. It's definitely an unlucky situation, and we have used the word unlucky to describe Danny Jansen so often, but this is where we are, and it's really, really not a sprint here. The regular season is very much about survival and making sure that you're at your best for October, and these early decisions, it may not look it, but they will for sure make a difference, come the postseason when it actually matters most to your show.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's get Jim in Halifax on the line. Jim, welcome to JSOC. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. Great show. So the Cabrera incident doesn't really give me any issues. I have no fret with it. It was an emotional thing. It's early in the season. He was frustrated. He did what he did. He may have to pay a little bit for it, but it showed some life. The main thing I just wanted to bring up was, if you guys remember last year, the post-game incidents, the post-game shows that we would have, there was a palpable frustration, and I can see in these last couple of games this frustration just come to the surface with me personally anyway. And it all comes back to the lack of production in the lineup. The lineup just doesn't seem to be doing what it needs to be doing. And I want to leave you with a question about a particular player, Bo. I don't know what's going on with Bo, but he just doesn't look right at the plate. He's had a couple of errors last game, and I just wanted to kind of throw that out there into the discussion. What's going on with Bo? Thanks, guys.
Hey, Jim, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate you joining us from out east. Bo's offense doesn't really worry me that much, only because it's so early in the season. Because, guys pick it up late all the time. He has been so consistent offensively that I think he has, even if most of the team has not earned the benefit of the doubt, I think offensively Bo has earned the benefit of the doubt. So I think he will turn around. That's something I'm not super worried about. I admit I am a couple raised eyebrows, perhaps, at some of the defensive plays we've seen. Like Jim said, a couple of errors yesterday, or at the very least, plays that you think should have been made that weren't, has put somewhat of a creeping doubt in the back of my mind. At the same time, and I do wonder, Julia, how much we should parse this out, because, you know, what I'm about to say is going to sound like a giant excuse, but the Trop is also using a new turf this year. And if you think about it, really only two teams have played on this turf, and it's the Blue Jays and the Rays. Literally no one else has. And I don't think the Rays shortstops have necessarily made the greatest of plays. Even there have been some funky plays in the outfield, even today by Rays outfielders where balls drop just in front of him and it goes past them. And it happened to Ernie Clement a couple times today when he was put from third to left field. So like it's kind of bizarre because they're using this new turf that has like sand and ground up coconut husks instead of using the rubber pellets that you usually see. So I do wonder how much you take away from funky defensive plays, at least until you see other people either doing it or not doing it. And then you can say, okay, well, it's just on Bo versus on this funky turf that people haven't really seen before. Like, am I way out to lunch in saying that's a factor? I don't know.
I have to tell you, Show, I was at the Trop.
Did you run on the field? Did you try and make some grounders?
First of all, it feels weird, you know, to be standing there. The turf is different from what you would expect when you step on a major league field, but that's no matter. But what I will say is this: when the ball actually hits the turf, the amount of debris that just shoots up is pretty unbelievable, and you can see that there's something that is not familiar for these guys. And sure, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a factor, but the reality is that Bo Bichette is too good a player, too athletic of a shortstop, and a guy that honestly has taken great pride in his defense and in the strides that he has made defensively for that to be a quote unquote excuse, right? So it's this is who he is, and this is very much, you know, in a lot of senses, this is his team. He is the guy that steps up and that talks to teammates. We have heard about the rally early in spring training in which he just gathered everyone and spoke to them about accountability and about, you know, what it takes to win a championship. Things of that nature are just inherent to who Bo Bichette is. And when you see the defensive miscues, maybe a little slow to step in, a little slow to make a throw, which, you know, avoids a double play or whatever it may be, that's not what we expect to see from Bo at this point. So is it possible to say that something is wrong with him? I don't think so. Again, it's a very, very small sample size, super, super early in the season. But you do at least question, okay, is the focus there, and is the physical preparation there, and is he as ready to go as it seemed late in spring training here?
Yeah, because I mean, there were some moments even in today's game, even if you just put aside yesterday's entirely, where it, like, you know, the ball scoots under his glove doesn't quite contact the ground to stop the actual ball, so that goes beyond like what is going on with the turf, for example, right? So I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, but at least offensively, I'm fully ready to absolve him for at least a little while longer, just
absolutely,
because he's been the most consistent Blue Jay in the last, like 3 years, essentially, right? So,
yeah,
it, you know, if this was Vladdy, then I think you're kind of ready to do it because he hasn't been super consistent. I do want to talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on the other side of the break, after we take a very short one here. Vladdy, want to talk a little bit about Ernie Clement, some positives certainly about Ernie Clement's defensive play at third base, and a lot of people on the text line seem to agree. And we'll chat about Yusei Kikuchi as well on the other side. Still time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell, and certainly time to shoot us a text as well, 590-590, name and location. Jay's Talk continues after this. Show and Julia with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The offense, I mean, it was, you know, it's tough to, it's these guys can pitch, you know, so, you know, tough to string some hits together. I think we, you know, we hit some balls hard. JT hits the ball hard off the bench, you know, right at Randy. Double plays kind of, you had traffic, and I think double plays kind of hurt us today. But you give credit to them for making good pitches, and you move on to tomorrow, really.
John Schneider speaking to the media following a 5-1 Blue Jays loss to the Rays. You're listening to Jay's Talk. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz with you. We are live on sportsnet.ca, on the Sportsnet app, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. You can still give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, *590 on your cell. You can shoot us a text as well, if that's easier, 590-590, name and location. The People's text line is always open. I did want to talk a little bit about Yusei Kikuchi with you, Julia, because our first caller brought that up, and we haven't gotten to Kikuchi yet. It's interesting, right? Because I think for me, the primary aspect I was looking for Kikuchi today, I guess, was twofold, right? It was, how is he going to manage his walks? And I guess a kind of a subcategory of that idea is, will he be able to manage walks by throwing the fastball for strikes? And he did seem to lose a little bit of fastball control, especially towards the end when he was getting taxed for a couple of walks. I think the final line on him was 4 1/3, 6 hits, 3 runs, all of which were earned, 3 walks, and he did notch 4 strikeouts. So 3 walks proving to be a little damaging, certainly not just because he was walking guys, but because the pitch count went up pretty dramatically, especially in that third inning. And my other thing was, I was looking to see how much of the changeup he was going to use, because he was working on that in the spring. And in theory, that was the pitch that would have led him to pitch better against a lineup like today that was really righty heavy. And it doesn't really feel like either of those things went all that well for him today.
Yeah, with Kikuchi, the addition of a changeup is going to be obviously a good thing in the long run, but we do get the feeling that he's still figuring out that pitch. His last start of the spring was one in which he was really putting an emphasis on the changeup and trying to get a feel for it, and it didn't work out for him at that point either. Of course, it's easier when hitters know that that is what he's working on,
right.
So they're ready to attack and all of that, but it seemed like he was still, communicating with Alejandro Kirk, trying to figure out the movement, trying to figure out his own grip and just the arm slot for all of that. And, when it comes to changeup, the arm action is going to be the difference maker, because it needs to look like a fastball out of the hands.
Right.
And so it's a difficult pitch to necessarily maneuver from one off season into the regular season, but it's going to put Kikuchi in a better spot once he has a feel for that. It just may be that it'll take him a little bit longer. And in the meantime, he needs to rely on that, electric fastball that we know is there, and the slider and the curveball. I do think that, walks are always going to be something that we watch with Kikuchi, because especially what we saw in his first year as a Blue Jay. A lot of the times in 2022, though, we kind of saw him collapse a little bit, right? So he would walk guys, and then that would derail into a 3-run home run, and things would get out of hand really, really fast. And what we need to give him some credit for here is the fact that this didn't happen today, right? He kept himself. The mound visits happened when they did, and he came back throwing strikes again and throwing the fastball for strikes, even though he missed that during certain points of the game. There are some positives to be found in Kikuchi's outing, and I believe that the biggest negative show on the other side is honestly that he only went 4 1/3 for a rotation that really, really needed some length here, with Kevin Gausman set to start tomorrow. So, it does put John Schneider in a little bit of a difficult position coming in, and Gausman will be in a limit as to how many pitches he can throw. It remains to be seen, but the Blue Jays are obviously going to put their best foot forward in trying to get a series split.
Yeah, to what we got from Kikuchi today, your point is, I think, valid, because after the mound visit in the third, he started challenging, like, of all people, Yandy Diaz, and he was like throwing the guy like 96 mile an hour fastballs in the zone and basically saying, come and get it, and he won that battle. And then he ended up walking a couple guys, right? Like in that same third inning, I think he consecutively walked Randy Arozarena and Isak Paredes. And that, like I was saying before, really ran up his pitch count. Within the Kikuchi adventure, let's call it, that was today, we did get some good moments from both Vladdy and Clement in the field, if not necessarily at the plate. Although Clement, he did okay at the plate. He did hit into a double play, kind of, Schneider was saying, that hurt them, yes. But he went 2 for 3, like you said, or 2 for 4, I guess, after the final AB, which was right at the end of the game. But, with Clement, I see a lot of text here on the text line. I'm just going to read you a whole bunch of them, because they're all pretty similar. But I appreciate everyone sending those texts in. Rod in Vancouver. Actually, Rod says Vancouver, BC, so I appreciate him being very clear as to where Vancouver is. I'm just teasing. Rod says, if Clement keeps playing like that, I won't miss Chapman's defense. Paul in Burlington, I have no problem with Clement being the everyday third baseman, and Andrew in Hamilton, Ernie is amazing. The Blue Jays should play him every single day. I got to say, I really liked what I saw from Ernie Clement today. And he's probably never going to be a power hitter, probably never. But he made some great plays defensively. Like, he made a good sliding, diving grab to stop the ball from getting by him at third in the first inning. He dove to end that inning in the third to tag the base at third with the bases loaded. So he probably saved some runs for Kikuchi there. It was a very Chapman-esque play, for I thought immediately when I saw it. And then another one coming, and this is the one that I think really sold me, and I'm sure it sold everyone. In the sixth inning, he goes deep to get the ball. He goes really deep in the hole to get it, and then just rifles it to Vladdy across the field. And Vladdy made the splits to get it. It was a nice catch from Vladdy as well to receive it, but that prevented it from, at the time, being made 4-0, and it ended the inning. So I count me impressed with Ernie Clement.
Yeah, it's definitely a good development for the Blue Jays. They are expecting Clement to be, you know, the utility infielder for them, and we have seen that a little bit, but it wasn't at all guaranteed that Clement was going to make this team, right? He just performed his way onto this roster, and in the same way that he did that, he can perform his way into a more regular role with the Blue Jays, and keeping an open mind as to where he can play. We saw him a little bit at left field today, and that was an adventure in its own right for sure, but he has done a little bit of that in the past as well. He is going to get these opportunities. Joe, I don't know if this was discussed at all, but in spring training, he had 2 whiffs on 63 swings.
That's crazy.
Which is, it's absurd. Yeah. It most likely led spring training and Grapefruit Lead and Cactus League. It's difficult because you don't have all of the stats in all the ballparks.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
So it's difficult to say for sure, but it's just a ridiculous number. So that ability to make contact, to come up to the plate with an actual plan and execute it and not overthink it, this has just been a translation of what we saw from him coming into spring training. He worked all offseason on simplifying his swing and making sure that the contact is optimized. We saw the immediate results in Grapefruit League action, and now we are seeing it again here. Like you said, he's probably not going to be a power hitter, although, you know, every now and then you can expect some pop from him. He's a very athletic guy. He can take the extra base for sure, and expect him to keep getting those opportunities with the Blue Jays, because it is very clear that a guy like that has tremendous value for a major league club, especially one with high hopes as the Blue Jays do have right now.
It does feel like the door is very open for Ernie Clement to be closer to an everyday player than maybe we thought he would be when he was like one of the last guys to make the team, essentially. Like, and I know you always, you know, the common refrain in pro sports is follow the money, right? So IKF got the 2 years, you got several million dollars to be what you think is the everyday third baseman, but there's no real reason beyond that IKF's getting a lot of money that if Ernie Clement's playing well, there's no reason he shouldn't be that guy, right? Like, if you can get what Ernie Clement's if you can get what IKF's giving you from Ernie Clement and probably get a better offensive player out of it, don't you have to try that? Like, don't you have to put Ernie Clement in a position where he is getting more ABs? Because that's really the only way these guys improve, essentially.
That's the beauty of having that type of depth on your roster, right? It keeps the competition alive, although if you ask those guys, no one will even use the word competition, but it does keep the competition alive. And for a guy like Clement, you know, we haven't seen Davis Schneider as of yet, but he very much fits into that category as well. They are coming in every day with something to prove that goes beyond just helping the team. And this is also, you know, a personal matter here in trying to cement yourself and trying to establish yourself and not look back into the minor leagues. And that's what we're seeing from Clement, is that he is a major leaguer, period. He knows what he's good at, and he knows how to get the best of those attributes. It's pretty commendable in this day and age to have a guy that can not only fill that utility role for you in the infield, but who also has that sort of self-knowledge and game plan coming into the plate.
Yeah, I can't wait to see more from Ernie Clement. I really can't. And I think I'm not saying this to like crap on IKF by any means, but it's just, you know, you want to see more from guys that you think can give you more. And it's one game, and, you know, the idea of small sample sizes, it's early, kind of cuts both ways. But hey, I mean, if Ernie Clement can do that more consistently, I think we'll be very excited. A lot of people's bold predictions, let's put it that way, Julia, will come true. A lot of the listeners had Ernie Clement being the starting third baseman by the end of the year. So
really?
I look forward to that being true. I look forward to doing more Jays talks with you, including tomorrow.
Absolutely. I'm happy to. Maybe you can share some more of the fans' or bold predictions, our listeners' bold predictions.
We will. Absolutely, we will.
That sounds
fun. We can get
fun.
Those on the air definitely as the season goes on. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Show Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Halifax and Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia Kreutz, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Nick Blackmore, Tom Young, I'm Show Ali. That does it for us. We'll be back tomorrow for more weekend coverage of Jays talk. Kevin Gausman will take the mound, so perhaps the starter will lead the Jays to a series split. One can hope. Enjoy your long weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you later.